Please, this morning to Luke chapter 18, Luke the 18th chapter. Ann Collins just handed me a little cartoon out of a St. Louis paper, and I know you can't see it, but up in the left-hand corner, here's a man holding what looks like, what was that, silly putty? And he's holding it up here like this, and he says, "This stuff is incredible. You can stretch it. You can twist it. You can distort it. Truth's a wonderful thing." We are in Luke chapter 18, and Jesus is giving us two parables, the subject of both being prayer. We looked Wednesday evening at the first one, and it concerned the lady that went to a judge who cared nothing about man, admittedly, nothing about God, but because of her persistence, she literally wore him down until he finally acted. And if you read in verse 5, he says the only reason that he gave the widow anything is as follows: "Because this widow bothers me. I will give her legal protection, lest by continually coming she," and then the verb, "wear me out." And we commented last time that the verb literally means to give a black eye, to strike, or to hit in the face. And therefore you have the option of taking that literally if you wish, or figuratively. If literally, the judge simply said, "I think this woman is tenacious enough that I may get attacked and get a black eye out of all this thing, and therefore because of fear of physical attack," or if you wish to soften it a little bit, he was not afraid of physical attack, he was simply saying, "She just wears me out," or "wears me to the ground." So the first point made in verses 1 through 8 is prayer should be persevering. And that is the lesson in the parable of chapter 18, verses 1 through 8. Now we're ready to pick up this morning, and the emphasis is going to be prayer. It should be humble. And that is 18, verses 9 through 14. And we break that into two parts. And let's read through the parable. First, the introduction to it, verse 9. "He also told this parable to certain ones who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and viewed others with contempt." That introduces it. It's introduced by telling us that Jesus is going to be dealing with an attitude, a way of thinking, and that is the introductory verses. "Trusted in themselves, viewed others with contempt." And so the words "trusted" and "viewed" both emphasize attitude. And so our first point will be the introduction to it. And the introduction says we want to focus on attitudes. And we will have the attitude of the Pharisee and the attitude of another man, but we'll come back to that in a moment. From this point on, it's two of everything. One person does this, the other does this. That fits nicely because when we talk about attitudes, Isaiah put it this way. He said, as God spoke, "Your thoughts are not my thoughts." In other words, two ways of viewing things, either divine viewpoint or human viewpoint, and therefore the attitudes would be looking at things God's way, divine viewpoint, or looking at things man's way, human viewpoint, and these two attitudes come down in a series of twos. Number one, two men. And that's 18:10. Two men. We're just overviewing now. "Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee, and the other a tax collector." Following the two men, we'll have two prayers. and that is 18:11 through verse 13. Verse 11, the Pharisee stood and was praying thus to himself, God, I thank thee that I am not like other people, swindlers, unjust, adulterers, and even like this tax collector, gatherer. I fast twice a week, I pay tithes of all I get, but the tax collector standing, well, there's his prayer, but the tax collector standing some distance away, his prayer is offered. Then finally, coming out of the two men, or the two attitudes, the two men, the two prayers, we have a set of two results. 18:14. I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. And so the two results are going to be a justified man and a non-justified man. And it's based on the principle that everyone who exalts himself shall be humbled, and he who humbles himself shall be exalted. So that's the overview then of this important teaching of Jesus. So we begin with point one, introduction. Verse 9. Now, since Jesus is teaching on the subject of prayer and has been doing so about how persistent this woman is, obviously into the minds of his listeners would come a question. If we are to be persistent, as the preceding parable just taught, if we are to knock at the door repeatedly, then we have a question in mind that should be asked, and that is this. What are the grounds on which God can be approached? What are the grounds of approach to God? And by grounds of approach, I simply mean you're going to a sports event, you arrive at the stadium, and what are your grounds of approach? How do you get in the door? How do you enter? On what basis do you claim a seat? And the answer to that is very simple. You approach the gate, you can enter the gate because you have bought a ticket. And therefore, purchase. You put out money, you have a receipt saying that you put out that money, and that gives you a claim to a designated seat and a designated place. Is that the way we approach God? Can God be approached on the basis of what we produce? Can He be approached on the basis that I did this and that? And notice this is certainly the mentality of the Pharisee. I fast twice a week. I pay tithes of all I get. And the obvious thinking is I can approach God on the basis of my own merits. And therefore, in this little parable, you've got two approaches. Number one, you've got the approach of the Pharisee. I can approach on the basis of my personal righteousness. That was his thinking. God may be approached on the basis of personal righteousness. And everything that he does screams it. Every part of his body is lifted upward, looking into the face of God. His hands are raised. He's standing up. His face is raised toward God. And it's all on the basis of, look at me, who I am, here I am, I approach you, look at this bum over here, I am better than, better than, better than. And it comes through very clear that the basis is his own personal righteousness. The tax collector, let's just call him TC, the tax collector came with a different attitude. We may come only on the basis of propitiation. Propitiation simply means another has satisfied, that's what propitiation means. Another has satisfied God for me. In other words, I get in on the ticket of another. Now, when you come down to, and I use the word propitiation or freely because it is used in the text, come down to verse 13. And notice as the verse closes his prayer, we have the translation, God be merciful to me. Do you have a note out in your margin? Do you have two with merciful? You go out in the margin of my NASB. It says, or propitious. And we'll talk about that word later, but the word is not mercy. God be propitious toward me. In other words, may you be satisfied with somebody's righteousness beside mine. And so notice the whole underpinning of the whole lesson is how can I approach God? And the two different issues are, or two different attitudes, are one says, I can produce the goodness, the righteousness that will make God open his arms and say, I accept you into my presence. The other says, I can't do it. I have to have somebody satisfy the demands of God for me. And that is the idea of propitiation, or we approach God on the basis of his mercy, on the basis of his grace, and therefore totally different than the preceding. The first one says, the righteousness is in me. The second man says, the righteousness that brings me to the presence of God is not in me, it is in, as a matter of fact, someone other than me. The grace of God, the mercy of God, propitiation is the idea. And that is the way we are introduced to the parable. Now, with that, we then, seeing the two totally different ways of thinking, we go down the road with each one going a different direction, and we have the two men, 18:10. Now, these two men, again, with two totally different attitudes, and keep in mind what verse 9 has established, different attitudes relative to how to approach God. So two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The first thing is notice both did have a common point, and that is both went to the temple. At the temple, there were at least four things that were done routinely. Number one, it was the place of public religious activity. Was the place of public religious activity in Israel. Emphasis, public religious activity. Number two, it was the place where you made a sacrifice or a gift. This extends, of course, clear back into the Old Testament. Not only were those two things true, but it was also a place of teaching. And third, or fourth rather, and here comes to our point, it was also the place of personal devotion. And when we go down this listing, it becomes obvious that the point for these two men going to the temple was the latter. They're going up there for personal devotions. Now, why would you go to the temple for personal devotions? And the thinking behind all of that was simply this. It was the common belief that prayer was more effective in the temple than elsewhere. Or prayer was most effective here. And you can see how that would come off of the Old Testament thinking that the temple was the place of God's presence, and his presence was carefully cordoned off on the basis of how close you could come. And therefore they felt that since this is the place where God dwells, then you surely ought to find your prayer most effective most likely to be heard and most likely to be answered if you prayed at the proper place. That mentality still comes over in religion in general, does it not? Go to the church to pray. The church has kneelers and so forth. And therefore the thinking is that God in a special way is associated with a building. And therefore that's the place to pray. So, both of them are together in their place of prayer. At this point, everything shifts. Because we have two totally different prayers. 18, 11 through 13. Two totally different prayers. Number one, of the Pharisee, 11 and 12, and then of the tax collector, verse 13. First, of the Pharisee. And lots of things come across to indicate his attitude. Now remember what the attitude is. I can approach God on the basis of personal merit. Now, notice the things that show that attitude. Number one, his posture. Verse 11, the Pharisee stood and was praying thus to himself. And so the idea of standing, lifting the head, lifting the eyes, gives us the idea of the self-righteous arrogance. I do not kneel in humility before God. I do not need to kneel in humility. I can stand and look God in the eye is the idea. And thus standing there is the idea of his arrogance. Everything in Pharisaic prayer was lifted up. Your body is upward, your arms were upward, your head was upward, and that was the posture. And it revealed the attitude. Second, his address. Who does he address in prayer? Verse 11. The Pharisee stood and was praying thus to himself, God, I thank thee. Who did he pray to? Prayed to two people, didn't he? Outwardly, the prayer was addressed to God. I'm going to put a little ellipsis off of the word God and come out and comment on that in just a moment. But outwardly, whoever heard him, he said, God. So outwardly. However, Luke put something in the text that is interesting. Or Jesus put something in the text that is interesting. He stood and was praying thus to himself, O God. So outwardly God is addressed, but actually he prayed to himself. So Jesus is saying, God is what you hear. But let me take you down underneath the word God, set that aside for just a moment, and tell you who he really prays to. He really and actually is only praying to himself. And so, who does he address? God. Now, I put an ellipsis after the word God. It's the first word of his prayer. Coming down to verse 11. The Pharisee stood and was praying thus to himself, quote. And notice the quote mark begins with the word God. And I put an ellipsis after God for the simple reason. Anyone see why? Follow on in the prayer and see what happens. After the prayer, he never mentions God again. It's, oh God. And the focus immediately shifts from God to himself. I thank thee that I am not like other people. And so, very interesting point there is after the word God is I. And therefore, this is merely a address, and everything beginning with the pronoun I from that point on is focused on himself. And thus, why Jesus begins by saying is that actually he's praying to himself. He's talking to himself and about himself. That's the key. To himself, about himself. To himself, about himself. And that's the thrust of his prayer. Wouldn't that make sense? How do you approach God? You approach God on the basis of your own personal righteousness. So let's have a little recital of that righteousness before God so you can approach Him. His posture shows his attitude. His address shows his attitude. And third, his comparison shows his attitude. And whenever there is comparison in order to show that we are superior, we never compare up. We never even compare parallel. We always compare down. And thus, notice in the 11th verse, I thank thee that I am not like other people. And here we go, down. A swindler, which probably he was not. Unjust, which probably he was not. Adulterers, which probably he was not. And even this tax collector, which he certainly was not. But notice he does not compare himself with righteous people. He does not compare himself with those of good character. He does not say in the passage that I compare myself with Isaiah, the prophet. Or I compare myself with Abraham. Or I compare myself with Moses. I am better than Abraham. I am better than Moses. I am better than Oh no. It is always comparison downward, and it is comparison to those of bad reputation. And all of his listing is there. You would think just logically that you would say to yourself, is that really making good sense? Do you feel proud of yourself this morning that you're not a bank robber? Do you really feel that that would impress people to say this morning as you go out, my name is John Smith. I'm not a bank robber. I'm not a rapist. I'm not all of these things. And really, just on a logical basis, who's going to be impressed with that? You probably would respond, well, say, I hope to heaven you're not those things. But this is his mental attitude toward God. And if we are not impressed with those things, how could you ever think that God would be? But that nonetheless is his frame of mind, and this is what he is thinking. Comparison inevitably sits on a perch and looks downward. Okay, that's the prayer of the Pharisee. The prayer now of the tax collector. By the way, let me add one other thing onto this. His address, his comparison. Let me add a C to that. His works. And his works are found in verse 12. I fast twice a week. I pay tithes of all I get. Let me introduce a word because it is a word used in Roman Catholic theology called works of supererogation. Super then E-R-O-G-A-T-I-O-N. Anyone recognize the term from with a Catholic background that recognized supererogation? I'm surprised. I wasn't even going to explain the word. And I mentioned it to Jane this week, and she didn't recognize the word. Supererogation simply means, in a general sense, works in excess of duty. works in excess of duty. And all of the works that this man mentions are all in excess of duty. For example, he says that he pays tithes, he fasts twice a week. The law required it something like once a year, and he does it twice a week. Duty said fast. And if it said fast once a month, then works of supererogation would do it every day or something of that sort. He even tithes his parsley. Fast twice a week. I pay tithes of all that I get. And I get that from another passages where the Lord talks about how they tithe of their mint and their cumin. They tithe of their herbs. And therefore, a very self-righteous Jew or Pharisee in this context, if he planted a garden and God said nothing about tithing your garden, but he would say, look at my tomatoes, I tithe 10% of them. And we may add, since that time is nearing, that once a year I have had a vision, and it came right out of this passage, God saying that I need to tell you that works of supererogation will get you a higher standing before God and man, and certainly me, if you will give me the first of your homegrown tomatoes. So having truth's incredible. You can stretch it, twist it, distort it. I guess I'd have to add one, downright pervert it. But nonetheless, that's just a parenthesis. Okay, general works in excess of duty. It is also used in a technical sense in Roman Catholic theology. And it refers to works above and beyond what is required for salvation. It is sort of like having a little storehouse of extras that will assist you in purgatory to effect an immediate exit or a quick exit. It's a thesaurus of extras that you do in this life that can be noted and that can be stored for you, and they can become effective in your extrication or release from purgatory. Works of supererogation. And notice all of his works were along that line. That is the way he thought. I can do more. When we started with the thought that I can do what is required to approach God. And now the thinking goes further. And it is logical. If I can do what is required, what is wrong with building up a little storehouse so that I'll be sure to have plenty when it was needed? So the law said fast once a year. He fasted twice a week. The law said tithe your money, and he tithed his herbs. Let me give you an example of a non-biblical Pharisaic prayer. This comes from the time of Jesus. If you wish to run out and purchase the book, you might get Strachan Bilerbach, Commentary on New Testament with Talmud and Midrash. You'll find it exciting reading. Kidding. I'm only giving my source, and it is a good, dependable source for documents out of the first century, extra-biblical, and here is a sample of a Pharisaic prayer coming out of the times of Jesus that's recorded in the religious literature of the Jew, which would be your Talmud and your Midrash literature, and it says, I thank thee, Jehovah my God, that thou hast assigned my lot with those who sit in the house of learning, and not with those who sit at street corners. Notice, very much like the prayer here, is in the same flavor. Catch this. I rise early, they rise early. I rise early to study the words of the Torah, and they rise early to attend to the things of no importance. I weary myself, and they weary themselves. I weary myself and gain, they weary themselves without gaining anything. I run and they run. I run toward the life of the age to come, while they run to the pit of destruction. And doesn't that reflect exactly the attitude that was there in this particular prayer? Okay, now to the prayer of the tax collector, of the Pharisee, and now of the tax collector. Verse 13. Now notice how his attitude is totally different. He recognizes he must approach God on the basis of not his own merits, but those of another, and several things reveal his attitude. So, in contrast to the Pharisee who tries to get as near as he can, notice the tax collector, number one, his distance. And that's verse 13. But the tax collector, standing some distance away. And the contrast intended is probably the Pharisee got as close as he could to the sanctuary. That would make sense. He felt he deserved it. And consequently, as closely as he could legally come, he came into the temple. However, the tax collector, because of his attitude, stands some distance away. Notice his posture. His distance, his posture. Instead of standing, lifting the hands and lifting the eyes or head, we are told that he was unwilling, even unwilling, to lift up his eyes to heaven, but was beating his breast. Beating his breast would be obviously the idea of recognizing his unworthiness, his self-accusation, his guilt was all there. Or, put it this way, both of these say he came as a sinner, deserving nothing. Now, as a result, well, notice his petition. Petition is as follows. God, be merciful to me. Notice the definite article. Not a sinner, the sinner. And so the contrast is the Pharisee versus the sinner, or the self-righteous versus the sinner. And the request is, please be merciful to me. And as we have said, the word merciful means to propitiate. Propitiate means to satisfy demands. And he knew that because God was righteous, he demanded righteousness. And because he was just, he demanded justice. And he said, I can't meet your demands. But I can say this, can you meet me on the basis of being satisfied that your demands are met? That word, and let me show you the same word now used in Hebrews 2. Hebrews 2. Same word. The same word that he used in his prayer is the word that is used in Hebrews 2 of Jesus Christ. Chapter 2, verse 17. Therefore, he, Christ, had to be made like his brethren in all things, that he might be a merciful and faithful high priest in things pertaining to God. Here's our word, to make propitiation for the sins of the people. And this is the word that this man seizes upon. And he says, I understand something. I understand that God cannot be approached unless he's propitiated. I cannot walk into his presence unless he's satisfied. I cannot barge through the door. There has to be a satisfaction made on the part of another. And this is the very word that is used in the New Testament to describe the work of Christ, is that it is His work that satisfies the demands of God's justice and righteousness. Therefore, we're able to come to God by Him. Now, coming out of that are two results. And the two results are based on, number one, the fact. And the fact is stated in verse 14. I tell you, this man went down to his house justified. And that word, justified, dikaiō, is the word. Let me say that again. It is the word used by Paul in the book of Romans to describe our standing before God. Now notice at the end of this word a little important thing. In the Greek language, sometimes the endings fall into a pattern. In other words, there are lots of a-o words. And your a-o words are declarative words. That means to declare righteous. Now please notice, the force is declarative. It doesn't mean to make righteous. When Paul says, therefore, being justified, and uses tekaio, he does not mean we are made righteous. It means we are declared righteous on the basis of the penalty for our sins is already paid. To declare righteous is justification. To make righteous is what? Sanctification. To be righteous is glorification. And therefore, he's simply saying that on the basis of another, I can declare that you are something. And very much like a courtroom scene whereby a person who is truly... Well, let me ask you. Are people in court ever set free who are truly guilty? Never, right? Of course, happens every day, doesn't it? It happens on the basis of a deal made by the attorney. It comes on the basis of a fine paid. And that's the idea involved at this particular point. We remain, as this man did, we remain sinners. After he was declared righteous, was he still the sinner? Sure he was. But he was declared by God to be righteous. And the principle on which that takes place is 14b. Everyone who exalts himself shall be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. And so the bottom line of all of this is the biblical principle, the way up is always down. The way up is always down. And thus this man stands before God as justified. Now, we're over our time, but let me give you a couple of observations. Notice God rejects all external performance. A man sees what's before his eyes, but the Lord sees what's in his heart and responds accordingly. Can a man sin even when praying? It's exactly what the Pharisee did. He sinned while praying. Why? His mental attitude was merit attitude. And praying with merit attitude is sin. Did you pick up that there is a parallel between the prodigal son and his brother and this incident? The prodigal son, parallel to the tax collector. Remember, the prodigal son made the remark that I have sinned. I'm not even worthy to be your hired servant. That's very much like the tax collector's prayer. God be merciful to me, a sinner. And the Pharisee is very much like his older brother. So both of them are really a study in unrighteousness and self-righteousness, and you might want to take some time to go back and read the prodigal son and his self-righteous brother, parallel the tax collector, like the prodigal son, and his older brother, parallel to the Pharisee. Father, we're thankful this hour for your word and your truth. In Christ's name, amen.